Greetings, Meltopians. Are you looking to delve deeper into the world of Meltopia? Then check out our Patreon, where you can find written mythos pieces, world maps, found footage, art, Patreon-exclusive shows, and more. Just go to patreon.com/Meltopia and join one of our tiers for access to great new content. Brave the forbidden and embrace the darkness.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Morin looked into the fire, its orange hues shifting between amber and light red, embers floating off it like specks of dirt from a shaking dog. About an hour after losing his stomach all over the ground, Salvatore humbly took a seat. Argos remained on the rim of the campfire's glow, surely stewing on what Riva had done to him. It was just another reason for him to hate them. As for Wesley, he was asleep in his tent. He was healing from his wounds well, almost too well, although much of the damage seemed to be psychological, the product of trauma from the psychic attack, or whatever it was. Still, there were things about Wesley he didn't understand. For one, how did he know the language? It was a dialect of Erythemic, no less. It was a discovery the group simply ignored, given the extreme circumstances. But now, Wesley was undergoing unprecedented healing. Something was up. He was worried the serpent lines may be slowly influencing his biology. But if that were the case, why wasn't he suffering the effects? It made no sense. But that mystery would have to wait without knowing more about the continent. Moffat suddenly came out from his tent, his lantern alight, casting hordes of strange shadows upon the floor planks and against the walls of the crumbling house they were staying in. For a moment, the light struck Salvatore's eyes. It was only for a second, but they shined with a strange effervescent green, a putrid kind of olive that sent Vorn back to that lake he woke up in all those years ago. Just the memory of the place set his heart beating, his chest becoming tight and his breath shallow. He remembered floundering in the depths and seeing horrible catastrophes of life, shapes, blasphemies to biology, and any other rule-abiding process in the physical universe. When, for that split second, he saw the moss color of Salvatore's eyes, he heard that melancholy hymn, that calling that felt so alien, yet so familiar, as if it sang to some fundamental force residing within him. He took a few minutes to try and calm himself, to ease himself back into the reality around him, despite its uninviting qualities.
Salvatore, do you have any more ideas of what they, bonded you with?
Salvatore looked down at the ground as if to hide his nervousness. No, I just know these weird things come out of my eyes for some reason. Vorn carefully inspected Riva's expression as he spoke to Salvatore. He was worried, yet stern, as if he were somehow holding Sal's mouth shut with a stare. Vorn was usually a patient person, but given recent events, his composure had eroded, partially because the secrets were starting to pile up.
Sal, pardon me for saying, but you're as good at lying as you are at being subtle. And regardless of what River told you, I do not have to be coddled. Now, please, as my friend, tell me what you know about the thing inside of you.
Salvatore's eyes looked over to Riva, whose face grimaced. After a moment or so, the Malsayer nodded his head, as if giving Salvatore permission to speak.
It's kind of hard to explain. I have memories of things, reactions. The thing, whatever it is, it isn't from here. Or Earth. I know that. I don't know how I know that. I just do.
Well, where's it from?
That's the thing. I don't really know. The place, it was destroyed.
It was at this point that Salvatore looked at Riva, and he gave a second nod.
He was drowned by a sort of living green storm or ocean.
Vorin's eyes widened, and he tried to hold back a gasp.
A green ocean?
Yeah, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. It's like it was alive, destroying or subsuming everything in its path. Cities, mountains, the sky even, the whole world had been overcome by it. And the song, there was a
horrible song.
Vorn was visibly shaking, and a part of him wanted to retreat from Salvatore, but he steadied his nerves, as that was indeed what Riva was afraid of.
So the thing inside you, it's...
It's something that lived in that place. Something that existed beneath the water. I don't know. It's all jumbled, and yet it all seems so familiar. But I think whatever they bonded to me was contaminated or corrupted by this, fallen sea. I can feel it somehow, yet it's not in control. I don't know how to explain it.
I see.
Warren, this is why we didn't want to tell you, but it doesn't control me, man. It's not like that. It's like a ghost living in my head.
It doesn't control you. Yet.
Riva suddenly began to sign, his hands moving in a blur, vigorously changing shape.
I know, Riva, but we don't know the extent to which the thing is integrated. The Fallen Sea is an incomprehensible, powerful thing. How do we know it will not turn him? That is its nature, Riva, to corrupt.
God damn it, Vorin, I'm still me. Good old goofy Salvatore. It hasn't corrupted me. Like I said, I don't know how, but I get a sense that it's not in control. It's not complete.
And what if that is exactly what it wants you to think? I will not. I will not go back there. I will not be subsumed or enslaved by that thing. Not again.
Riva stood up this time, continuing to sign.
You don't know what you're talking about, Riva. You weren't there. You didn't feel its vastness, its putridness.
Fuck, Vorin, I'm not a danger to you or anybody else. You need to trust me on this. I would never hurt you. Any of you. I would kill myself before I let anything like that happen.
Vorin sat there silent, his eyes gazing into Sal's as if trying to see through him, through to the thing that had haunted him since that terrible year. He was calmer, but not satisfied. There was no way to know if what Salvatore was saying was true. For now, he would try to believe his friend, but also keep him at a safe distance. He had no idea what the Belfine had done. How much had been distilled and poured into Salvatore? Did it have the capacity to be controlled? These questions couldn't be answered, at least not right away. But he would have to deal with it just the same. The silence eroded the friendly atmosphere, distrust now wafting in the air as undoubtedly as the fire's embers. Vorin didn't want to feel that way, but he did. He felt terrible for it, as he could see the rejection on Salvatore's face. Sal had already been through so much, and now he had to bear the weight of Vorin's burdens. Despite how he felt, Vorin fought against it.
I'm sorry, Sal. I shouldn't put my issues on you. I only ask that you bear with me. It's a lot to absorb, and I can't say I'm comfortable with it because I'm not, but there's no reason to punish you. It will just take some time getting used to.
Salvatore just nodded, knowing the man couldn't possibly fully trust him. But it was a step in the right direction, nonetheless. Tearing his gaze away from Salvatore, Vorin saw Moffat sitting on a rotting bench on the right side of the room. He looked troubled by the situation. Ever since Wesley did what he did, Moffat seemed deep in thought. You could only see it when he wasn't paying attention to anyone, which was rarely. Moffat was an avid spectator, always carefully analyzing the situation and the people surrounding him. He wasn't simply a seer, but a student of human, and perhaps even non-human, behavior. But tonight seemed different. He appeared more introspective, almost sad. He'd never seen him that way. He was nearly human. Of course, as far as they knew, all the Moffats were human. But they all seemed beyond that somehow. Suddenly, Cyrus looked up and spoke.
Are any of you familiar with the quarantine towns?
Yes, those municipalities authorities have deemed too dangerous for people to inhabit. Tartarus is one, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. There are a slew of them. They are gated off and deemed off-limits, often without explanation. Well, when I regained consciousness after the Great Darkness, I woke up in just such a place. Wait a second. Did you have an awakening experience? I thought since the Moffats could see into the future, or whatever you do, you would have taken precautions.
Yes, we were aware something of monumental proportion was coming, but we didn't know what specifically. In retrospect, it would have made little difference even if we did. You see, many people think of the Great Darkness as some run-of-the-mill apocalyptic event, but nothing could be further from the truth. It was a slap in the face to all things rational, an event that defied a system of absolutes and solidity, an ever-vigilant machine that should have guaranteed its impossibility. And yet, it didn't. Impossibility became inevitable. Our attempts at hiding were as foolhardy as an ant's attempt to heft a crushing boot from its tiny body.
So, where did you wake up?
In a strange little town in Vermont, now called Werewood. Have any of you heard of it?
I've heard a thing or two about it.
The legend is that the town completely changes upon a full moon, causing the city itself to shape-shift into hideous things. Hence the were in the name.
That's correct. When I awoke, of course, I had no idea where I was. I only saw gothic and twisted architecture all around me. Lonely houses devoid of occupants, streets empty but for the detritus of an abandoned city. I remember the place croaking and moaning like some old man's stubborn, brittle bones. Luckily, I had my lantern with me and quickly lit it. The shadows of that place bloomed into life. Quaint cottages reflecting horrid black doppelgangers. Cars swelling and carnivorous upon the streets. Even dead lampposts arched and slithered like ebon snakes. I was terrified. As a Moffat, I'm not used to being taken off guard. But there I was, absent a plan or concept of what I was dealing with. It took some time, but I managed to summon the grit to move. Traveling down broken sidewalks and across the loam of long neglected backyards. I barely needed my lantern, it turned out. The full moon's illumination was more than enough to light my way. In such things it did show me. The brick chimneys crowning the houses had formed long necks and strange visages that looked about like great serpentine sentinels. Cars' hoods opened to reveal jagged metal teeth and churning viscera where engines should be. I even saw a mannequin parading down the street. Its plastic body was deformed into that of a macabre and arthritic thing, shambling down the road with an unknowable purpose. For really, what could a living dummy want? I wandered the shape-shifting metropolis for some time, taking in the sights. The living place seemed indifferent to my presence, going on about what apparently metamorphic cities go on about. I remember sitting down and watching a clawfoot bathtub run as surely as a dog down a tunnel, chasing a parade of wound-together saplings that resembled those tied-together balloon animals clowns make at children's birthday parties. It was so absurd and yet so darkly beautiful. It was one of the rare times in my life that I could stand back and appreciate the majesty of the unknown, not have to deconstruct it. Look at it as a piece of a larger puzzle. Break it down and stuff it in my lantern and summon its shadowy secrets. What freedom.
Warren, Riva, and Salvatore looked at each other quizzically, not knowing how to react. What did you do then?
I pondered. For hours I sat there and appreciated the mystery, reveling in the presence as I had never before. Eventually, the sun usurped the moon, and I watched the once-living town return to its more banal self. Then I left the place.
The camp went silent, the music of night creatures the only sound. Moffat seemed lost in the flames, thinking into their fiery tendrils.
You okay, Moffat?
Suddenly, as if remembering who he was, Moffat returned to his haughty demeanor.
Of course, my boy. I simply figured I'd join the club in sharing my awakening story. Anyhow, how is our friend Dr. Morrigan doing? Is he recovering well?
Physically, yes, but mentally it's hard to tell. He's still not speaking, though his eyes have begun to fix on things instead of, well, looking somewhere beyond.
I'm sure he'll recover with time. He just needs rest, I imagine.
Arcos, can you come here, please?
The annoyed sigh exhaled from Arcos's massive lungs sounded like a gale. Irritated, he lumbered over to the encampment, bending down below the roof to fit himself in the room.
Yes?
How much more time until we reach our destination?
4 or 5 days, perhaps a week at most. We've still yet to pass the Spire of Wardernock.
I thought we were going to avoid that thing.
We will veer as far away from it as possible, but it is sizable. Is that all you need?
Yes, Arcos, you can.
Arcos, I realize you must hate us. And I can't say I blame you. We delivered you from the hands of one slaver into another. Unintentionally, but I'm sure that matters very little to the one who must suffer the consequences of such an act. But please, do not feel the need to isolate yourself from the group. Despite your and Salvatore's spate, I think we can at least try to get along.
Moffat, Salvatore, and even Riva looked at Vorn strangely. He could see the hurt in Salvatore's eyes. He knew the reason Vorn wanted Arcos around. Vorn didn't even want to admit that he wanted Arcos nearby in case Salvatore changed. As for Arcos, the sentiment almost disgusted him, as if to apologize for one's action was a sign of weakness. Of course, Arcos's life probably demanded such a perspective, as there was no room for fragility. Moffat chimed in to disrupt the awkwardness. Yes, Arcos, please, take a seat. Riva, would you mind taking watch? Riva threw Moffat a quizzical glare. I'm sure Arcos and our dear Salvatore can manage to be civil to one another, yes? Whatever. Riva hesitantly nodded and trekked out into the night and disappeared. Arcos begrudgingly walked over to a dark and spacious section of the crumbling derelict and sat. The house rumbled as his weight set upon the moaning wood, dust filtering down from the ceiling. Arcos stared at Moffat, his eyes red, beaming daggers plunging into the seer's center.
You told us that your will is tethered to the Belfine, that they psychically control you. How was that not severed when the creature were allied with kill them or whatever it did?
They are dead in some senses and not in others, it seems. Their psychic profile has simply been rendered subservient or absorbed into your master. An irony that is not lost on me. I might have celebrated if their dispersal hadn't simply resulted in having a new, insane master.
You said once that you had to fight for your survival, that the Belfine, they replace their guardians with new iterations, creations. How long have the Chimerith been their, how should I say, crowning achievement?
It has been over 150 years since we replaced our predecessors, the Netherok. Vorgroth was a formidable foe, but in the end, I rent his head from his shoulders, establishing the Chimerith as the Belfine's warget, guardians.
Well, wait a second. They determine which of their creations gets to serve them by, what, like a fight?
The Belfine choose, based on a series of tests called the Inquiries of Ustad, who the paragon of each line is. Then those champions fight to the death in the Plains of the Broken. I believe you saw it on your way in. Upon victory, the new warget slaughter the old. What is left there is a reminder to future combatants what is at stake.
Jesus. Yet how many times have you had to, fight?
There have been dozens of challengers. The Ranzagor, the Visigin, the Leonoth. All fell by my hand, their bodies crushed beneath my feet, and their entire kind massacred by the Chimerith.
Well, that sounds, fucking awful. Arco shot a glare at Salvatore, his eyes infernos.
You were to be mine, the Chimerith's replacement. They had worked years on that little experiment, but could never find a suitable host.
Well, how would you know that? I would think the Belfine wouldn't share their achievements with, their servants.
Quite the contrary. The Belfine enjoyed taunting us with our potential replacements, believing this would help us achieve optimal performance if there was ever to be another contest. The threat of extinction, after all, is the strongest of motivators.
Salvatore looked down for a moment, not wanting to show that he was developing a kind of sympathy for the abused creature.
Look, I didn't want any of this, and I certainly didn't want to replace you and yours as the Belfine's new G-men. I just wanted to fucking kill them for what they did to me.
Arcos's eyes beamed less intensely, and he looked off into the distance, contemplative.
Is there anything more you wish to know?
No, Arcos. That will be all. Thank you for sharing. It was informative.
The brooding Hulk rose from his feet and walked out of the dead and rotting house, gloom and sadness following behind him. Grimland is a Maltopia production. Today's episode was written by Stephen Anzalone. The episode was edited by Walker Kornfeld. Sound production and editing was performed by Stephen Anzalone. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching Maltopia. That's M-A-E-L-T-O-P-I-A. And if you'd like to know more about Grimland and contribute to its nightmarish expansion, visit us at www.patreon.com/Maltopia, where you can gain access to all sorts of art, mythologies, stories, and more. For more information about Grimland and the world of Maltopia, visit us at maltopia.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Today we'd like to introduce you to a great fantasy audio drama called Cersei. The show is similar to Lord of the Rings, except that it focuses on an awesome gay sorceress on the planet of Elbion. Thyra is recording stories of her past to help regain her magical abilities. We learn of her life and how she came to be a member of the Cersei. If you're a fan of gay stories and characters, Lord of the Rings and Xena the Warrior Princess, you'll love this show. Check out Cersei on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.